Hello, you are listening to The Wellness Project with Des. I'm your host Desiree, a mental health therapist and holistic wellness coach. On my podcast, I interview experts in the field of mental health and wellness, as well as those who share their firsthand accounts of their mental health journeys. These interviews will give you many tips, tools, and strategies to improve your mental health, as well as give you hope, support, encouragement, and inspiration on your own personal mental health and wellness journey. Thanks so much for being here. I would greatly appreciate it if you took a moment to leave me a review on iTunes and leave the podcast 5 stars on Spotify. It really helps the podcast to grow, which in turn helps me to keep bringing on amazing guests and spreading mental health and wellness education and support. And make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. Are you ready to embark on a transformative journey towards holistic well-being, unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit? If so, I'm thrilled to invite you to my program, the Holistic Wellness Transformation Coaching Program. My one-to-one coaching program is a comprehensive and individualized approach to help you improve your overall well-being. As a holistic wellness coach, I'm here to guide you on a transformative journey to attain balance and harmony in all areas of your life. With personalized coaching sessions, I'll offer guidance and support throughout your wellness journey, starting with a thorough holistic assessment. We'll dive into your past, habits, thoughts, feelings, behaviors, and patterns that may be holding you back and no longer serving you. This assessment forms the foundation for your customized wellness plan. Together, we'll explore the 8 foundational elements of wellness to ensure you feel balanced and aligned with your goals and your values. This program goes beyond the surface, providing you with mental and emotional support. I will help you to manage stress, anxiety, and other challenges such as perfectionism and people-pleasing, offering techniques and strategies to enhance your resilience and your skills. The benefits of this program cannot be overstated. I'll be there every step of the way to support you in achieving balance and harmony in your life, manage stress, and improve your emotional well-being. Nurture healthy connections, create lasting, healthy habits, achieve your goals, and gain confidence in your ability to transform your life. Join me on this journey to holistic wellness. You could go to my website to check out my various packages, and you could go to my Calendly link found in the show notes to schedule a free 30-minute consultation call where we will go over the 8 core areas of wellness, as well as your goals and your dream life. Reach out and let's get started on your wellness journey so you can finally live the life you want. Hello, I'm your host Des, and you are listening to episode number 154. On today's episode, I am speaking with Dr. Claudia Parolini all about emotional eating. I think this is something that a lot of us struggle with. I know that I do. When I am stressed, when I am frustrated, when I am upset, I crave sugar. I crave junk food so bad. And I guess I never really thought about why that is. I never really connected the dots as to why when I feel emotional or really challenging feelings that I want candy and cake and cookies and chips and things like that. I really enjoyed this conversation with Claudia because she helped me to connect those dots and she explained why we do crave junk food when we're feeling emotional. She really gets down to the root causes of why we turn to food for comfort, and I thought it was really, really fascinating. I learned so much from this conversation and I found it to be incredibly helpful. And Claudia talks about how that awareness is so key. And this episode, this conversation with Claudia, definitely helped me to be more aware of why I turn to food for comfort. Because I do already have that awareness that I do turn to food when I'm feeling kind of escalated or stressed, I don't keep any kind of junk in the house. I try to be very intentional about buying junk food because I do have a sweet tooth. I do love cookies, cake, and candy and all of that, but I try to be really intentional about it. We grocery shop once a week and I put in our order online and I do not include any junk food. We don't keep it in the house because I know that I don't really have that self-control. So that is my way of controlling that behavior. I keep it out of the house unless we're intentional about it and we know that we want whatever for a special occasion, or I'm bringing in something to work, or we're going to watch a movie, so we want some treats. Otherwise, on the regular week to week, we don't buy any junk food because I would eat it all right away. And I know that about myself. And I know that when I'm upset and frustrated and stressed that I turn to food. So that is my way of coping with it. And I try to look for other ways to manage my stress, which we are going to be talking about with Dr. Claudia quite a bit in this conversation. I think that you're going to learn a lot from this episode, and I think that there's going to be things that you can implement, and it's really going to help you to become aware of this behavior and why you may be turning to food for that sense of comfort. I'm really looking forward to you hearing this conversation, so help me welcome Claudia.
Hi, Claudia. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you, Desiree, for having me. Very glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to our conversation. Today, we are talking all about emotional eating. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion. But first, I'd love if you would take a moment to introduce yourself, who you are, how you got to where you are today.
Sure. So I am Claudia. In terms of my background and training, I have a PhD in counseling psychology. And right now for many years, I have a private practice where I work in the areas of anxiety, trauma, depression. And then I kind of branched out of that as well. And as a coach, what I do is I help women transcend their emotional eating that I know it's kind of the focus of today's episode.
Oh, great. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. So to get us started, I would love if you can explain in your own words, what is emotional eating?
Yeah, so emotional eating is when we eat out of a desire to manage or navigate emotional distress or discomfort, rather than in response to our, you know, hunger or nutritional needs. So really, when we are engaging in emotional eating, we are using food and we are relying on food to help us kind of navigate really as a means to get some, you know, relief, some comfort, some distraction of whatever really overwhelming feeling that we might be experiencing.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for explaining that. And just the way you explain it, I feel like a lot of people do this. A lot of people kind of struggle with this and turn to food for comfort or, like you said, to manage or navigate difficult emotions. Why do you think some people emotionally eat, or what are some common root causes that you're aware of?
I think a key piece is that we do it to really alter, again, right, going back to what emotional eating is, it's really to alter the way that we are feeling. It might be, you know, unintentional, right? We might not be eating and telling ourselves, oh, I need to eat because I'm feeling, let's say, overly anxious. Usually it doesn't work that way, even though, you know, some people have that awareness, but many people might find themselves eating, not really fully realizing that they are doing it as a means to, right, get some comfort. So it might be really that, you know, there are some overwhelming feelings that we are experiencing and it just might be experienced as too much. And we need some, you know, some comfort, some relief, and we might kind of turn to food. You know, there are other pieces as well. There's the physiology piece, really, right? That every time that we eat, our bodies, our brains release dopamine. And without getting very technical, really, dopamine is it's called the feeling good neurotransmitter, right? Because it has that impact on our body. So we tend to feel good every time that dopamine is released. And we know that every time that we eat, you know, it's the dopamine is released when we eat, then again, when the food reaches our stomach. So in some way, our bodies reward us for eating. So then that this behavior becomes reinforced. So, of course, there are other aspects about this behavior that we know are detrimental. That's why, right, we're speaking about it. But in terms of the physiology, we have that reward, and then we kind of go back to food for that level, you know, for that sense of comfort, that sense of ease. And I think there are other pieces as well for us women, really the role that we have. Oftentimes, right, we wear different hats. We are oftentimes doing, and I know I'm generalizing, this is more traditionally, but perhaps still nowadays, right? We do a lot of the work at home. Sometimes in addition to the work that we do at home, we work outside at home. We tend to have this main, you know, caretaker role if we have children. But even if we don't have children, if we have a partner, or if we don't have a partner and we're single, even with our parents as well. So I think we are pulled, at least in our society, in many directions. And I think sometimes there's little space, little time to find outlets in some way to nourish ourselves, to replenish for all that we give. And I think then food becomes this kind of easy way, easy target, right? It's kind of easy to stretch our hands and, you know, reach for something and eat something else, because that, and that gives us that comfort. And I think that's one avenue, one way through which we kind of fall into this pattern. I think also, right, us women, again, most of the time are the ones, you know, buying the food, preparing the food, putting the food on the table. So we have this kind of close relationship with food. So sometimes, you know, we might go overboard and again, start over relying on food for comfort. And I think more generally, right, in society now, food has become so available, right? In every corner, we find one, two, even sometimes three places that we can, you know, easily get food, right? We don't even need to leave home, right? We can call these places, right? Services that, you know, brings us the food, you know, in a few minutes in our door. So I think also the piece is that it's so accessible, the food, that it can become an issue, right? If we don't know how to navigate it well.
Oh, so interesting. And yeah, you made so many great points. And I think a lot of people can resonate with the things that you're talking about. I know it makes a lot of sense for me. And I know that I can be an emotional eater. So I'm the one who does our grocery list. So I try really hard not to kind of bring that kind of stuff in the home, because I know that I'll turn to like cookies or cake or whatever it is, candy, when I'm upset. So I know a lot of people do this. And it's almost like a kind of vicious cycle, because we kind of get that dopamine hit, right? We feel better. We try to alter our feelings, but emotional eating in itself brings up a lot of feelings and a lot of kind of issues. So can you speak to that a little bit? What kind of feelings arise from the emotional eating itself?
Yeah, and I feel this is such an important piece, because again, we're speaking about the feeling good, the comfort, the relief, but then we have this other side, right, that makes this behavior so challenging in a way. So oftentimes, and I know it's different for every person, but oftentimes feelings that come up are feeling guilty for having engaged in that behavior, feeling shame, feeling very kind of disempowered, sometimes kind of disappointed in ourselves, kind of disillusioned. Sometimes for some women, they might feel kind of out of control, this kind of how come feeling, right? Because oftentimes this is a behavior that we try to tackle for quite some time before we are kind of effective at tackling this behavior. So there's oftentimes this feeling of, I did it again. I knew that I didn't want to do it. And again, I kind of fell for this. So there's a lot of, you know, putting ourselves down, you know, beating ourselves up, and kind of being harsh with ourselves in terms of our emotions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So what are some other ways that you're seeing that emotional eating can affect somebody's mental health?
Exactly related to these feelings that often come up. We were saying, right, the shame, the guilt, the sometimes even the anger that we might feel towards ourselves. Sometimes we might feel kind of disgust at our behavior. So all this, you know, in emotional eating really happens over and over again. It really starts taking a toll in our self-esteem, right, in the way that we see ourselves. And we may start even losing hope that we would be able to address this in an effective way at some point. So something that I've seen also often happening is that when this happens, you know, over and over for a long time, women start feeling that not only that this is a behavior that it's, you know, challenging, I'm having a hard time, but this kind of global experience of themselves, right, that I am unable to tackle this, I am incapable. So it becomes this kind of global judgment about our whole personality that really, really put us down overall, right? Not just in regards to one behavior, but it's kind of how we see ourselves, right? Some women might feel, you know, even small, weak. It has really, I think, tremendous implications for our mental health.
Okay, so it sounds like it really becomes almost a part of somebody's identity, that I am this, I am that. Yeah, so very insidious. So a lot of big effects on mental health, self-esteem. It becomes that identity, that self-identity that people are, like you said, are ashamed of. So one thing you said that's really interesting is that a lot of people that struggle with emotional eating aren't always aware of it. So they're doing this behavior, but they're not exactly aware that it's emotional eating or that they are turning to food to kind of alter their emotions to feel better. Are there any sort of ways that somebody can begin to recognize that they do struggle with emotional eating?
Yeah, and I actually love this question because I think that is really the first step, the awareness that this might be something that we, you know, can struggle with, even if it's a little bit in our lives. And I love what you said, by the way, that this is really a matter of degree, right? I think most of us, right, you know, after a difficult day at work with the kids, you know, a difficult day in general, we might turn to food. And that really, it's not really an issue when it happens, you know, not really very frequently. So the difficulty really starts when food becomes really our go-to kind of coping mechanism, if you will. So just I want to add that piece. But in terms of your question of how can we start to recognize that this might be an issue for us, one thing that I would say is if we start noticing that, you know, there are, you know, significant feelings, right? We might feel uncomfortable either emotionally or even physically when food is around or related to us having, you know, just kind of eaten. If we feel kind of guilty, if we feel that kind of the wish that, I wish I hadn't eaten that, or I wish I had stopped, you know, with the first helping of that. So I try to be attuned with any cues that our body can give us, perhaps, or even emotionally, right? Sometimes in the moment, we don't feel it strongly in the body, but emotionally, we start feeling a little bit of that shame, of that guilt, of that feeling of kind of disempowerment. So if we start feeling that, and we know that recently, right, in the last, you know, few hours we have eaten, I would try to become very curious if perhaps in some way I am relying on food for more than, right, our nutritional needs or more than as a response to hunger, but more to, again, as a way of coping with some overwhelming emotion.
I think that's really helpful for people to look out for. And I'm really glad that you've made that distinction. I think that's really helpful, the difference between emotional eating. And sometimes we do just, you know, eat a snack or after a hard day. And that's completely normal that behavior in itself isn't the issue. But the feelings that come along with it, if it's like very often, we don't have other coping skills. So I think that's really helpful. I'm glad that you explained that. Mm-hmm. So once somebody starts to recognize, become aware that they are turning to food as their kind of main coping skill, what's next? How can somebody begin to address the emotional eating?
Yeah. So as you ask this, it really brings me back to what we were speaking, because I think awareness is so important. Even before kind of running to do something, I think really spending some time really deepening our awareness, because it is the awareness that this might be happening to me. And that's kind of one level of the awareness. But I think also it's the reflection or the, you know, increasing awareness about what is the impact, right, that this is having in my life, right? How much of a toll this is taking, right? What is the price that I'm paying, right? And when I say this, mainly emotionally, for this behavior, because I really feel that if we spend time on this, really to hone our awareness and to deepen this, it becomes, you know, a little bit easier. I don't want to say easy, but easier than to have the conviction to work on how to tackle this in a different way. So I would say, again, I wouldn't discount the deepening our awareness. Again, the fact that it's happening, but also how much energy this is kind of sucking out of my life. How much time am I devoting to think about food, get the food, eat the food, then the feelings and the guilt, the shame. So really in my work with my clients, really that's a very important piece that we spend time on. I think something else that people can do is that try to know that there is help available and that there is help for this specific behavior, that it's, you know, that it's free, help that is inexpensive, so to speak. And of course, you know, more kind of tailored help that, you know, might be somewhat more expensive, but that exists, right? That we don't have to walk this path alone. And to speak about examples, free help are, right, there are many resources online, right? There are blogs about emotional eating, there are podcasts about emotional eating that we can start, right, making more space to better understand this behavior and see what might relate to us. What can we take? What kind of nugget of wisdom, if you will, can we take of this podcast, of this blog, that I might start to apply to myself? And knowing that, right, these resources are free and they might be great. You know, if we move into the kind of inexpensive, certainly there are books that address this with strategies and tools. So there's a lot available, right? If we go more to, let's say, the other side, certainly there are coaching programs, individual group that provide like a more tailored more in depth, more structure, more kind of almost like walking the path with you, if you will, if you need that, for people who need that. But there's really a range of help available to support women and to empower them with the message that it is possible to tackle this behavior and leave somewhat leave this in the past. I think one more thing that I would say, kind of concrete thing, because I know sometimes we need something more concrete. Keeping a log, I found with my clients that is very helpful. I know some people might hear this and feel like, oh, this might feel so simple, but I think it's a simple way that can give us a lot of insight. Because if we keep a log, let's say for a week, for 2 weeks, in which you write down, you know, what we ate at what time, you know, how much time did it take us to eat the food, how we were feeling before, how we were feeling after, perhaps feelings that came, you know, hours later, some of the ones that we were speaking, perhaps. And then after a week, we can sit down and take a look at that. And I think that really can give us insight about ourselves and how emotional eating is playing out in our lives. Because we might say, well, perhaps it's a certain time of the day, right, after I put the kids to bed. Or perhaps there are some days that I know are harder at work that I end up, you know, eating more than really what I want to. So we might start seeing those patterns when we, you know, keep consistently a log for, you know, several weeks. And then we can be kind of more prepared, right, at those times of the day. Or if there's an emotion that really stands up, oh, I kind of tend to eat when I'm feeling kind of lonely. Food can be that companion, right, as well. So I think that can tell us a lot about our own dynamics with food that then we can use to kind of tackle this behavior more effectively.
Oh, that's really great. And yeah, I think you gained so much insight from those kind of journals or trackers. That's something I always recommend for people that I work with anxiety, because that's such great data to go back and look at. And it gives you a lot of understanding, and it could help you build that awareness if you're not fully aware of, you know, the triggers or, you know, the foods you turn to or the emotions that come up. So I always think trackers or journals like that are super helpful. And I love that you said there's so many resources out there. There's so much support, because I think that it is such a common problem that so many people face, that just because of the amount of resources that are out there, people know that they're not alone. It's not a unique thing that is inherently wrong with them. This is very common, and that there are solutions out there, that you don't have to suffer alone. You don't have to struggle. That if you really do want to change these kind of patterns or coping strategies, that there is support out there. I think that's really, really helpful and powerful for people to hear. So I like how you've said that turning to food is somebody's way of trying to come up with an alternative feeling, you know, to alter their emotions. And it's that like coping strategy for them. For anybody that you work with, are there any either certain coping strategies that you recommend to try instead, or some that you find that are more effective for people that you work with?
Yeah. And I guess to this question, I would want to say that it varies a lot from person to person, right? What some people might feel, okay, this can be an avenue, this can be a route of something that helps me. Other people will be really kind of closed off, and that's okay. That's the beauty, that there's so many things, right, that we can do. And I know sometimes it's kind of trial and error to see what works for, you know, different people. But to name a few that people perhaps in the audience might want to try if this is something that they struggle with. So I always go back to the piece of the awareness. So if we can, sometimes we cannot, but if we can kind of catch this early and even name it for ourselves, kind of, right, as we are going to walk into the kitchen, as we are going to think and calling some of these places to bring us, you know, a pizza. If in the moment we can catch ourselves and just without judgment, right? I feel that's a key piece, right? In all these strategies, really the invitation is to do all this with compassion towards ourselves, with kindness, with openness. As you said, there's nothing wrong. This is just a way of coping. And if this is a struggle in your life, let's work on what are some other things that we can do to help you cope with this. But with that, you know, attitude of compassion and kindness and openness and without judgment, I would try to see, you know, this is one strategy that we work on. As we are, can, again, walking to the kitchen, even putting the food in our mouth, if we could for a moment, even if it's for the briefest moment, to kind of check in with ourselves and kind of ask us, why am I really eating this right now? Okay, well, it makes sense. You know, I might be a little bit hungry, or it might be that piece, but the role of emotions can be also playing a significant role, you know, at this moment that I'm eating. And it's okay if we don't know which emotion, if we don't know what triggered that emotion. You know, for some people, it might be very clear. Sometimes it's very apparent. Sometimes it's not. We might feel kind of numb sometimes. But just the insight that the emotions are playing a significant role right now in me wanting to, eat this much or having a hard time, stopping. Something very helpful that I know sometimes I heard from my clients is this incongruence, right? This kind of mismatch that has come up for them in response to this checking in. Kind of the feeling like, my body really doesn't seem to need more food, but I want it. But there's something in me that kind of wants to eat this, right? So that's another avenue in which we can tell, okay, well, really the emotions are kind of playing a significant role. So really, going back to the awareness, even to open up a little bit of space to be in touch with. This is not necessarily about wanting my body wanting food, but me having these emotions that I'm having a hard time sitting with or experiencing. So I think that piece of insight, it's really helpful, at least in slowing down things and making, if we can buy, an extra 30 seconds, a minute just to reflect. And again, I think it's a key piece to as we think about this, if we can do it without judgment, because I know easily, right, we can be very harsh with ourselves and start even in that moment to put ourselves down. And I always say, that's not the intention at all. The intention is really to befriend that need, to make a space for it. And even if, right, because some women have told me, well, yes, I did that, but then I ended up eating anyway, right, what I was intending to eat. And I was, it's okay, because this is really the first step, right? We are making a space to befriend what really is the source for this desire to eat, even if in that moment you ate the same amount. Because over time, we might find ourselves perhaps still eating, but eating a tiny bit less, or thinking that there are other things that I can eat that give me a sense of kind of fullness, but might not be this, specially either sugary or food that, we know it's kind of detrimental. So I feel when we open up that space, there might be other ways in which we can meet this need other than, consuming exactly the same amount and the same kind of food. And again, this is, I always say we're all a work in progress. So this is just maybe the beginning. So I think that's one idea if we can. I know sometimes my clients would say, well, but I cannot. Like whenever I realize that I did it, I already did it. Right. I late, I'm eating the food, the plate is empty. And it's okay. We can do it even after, right? So let's say I already went, I ate, I ordered something, the plate is empty, and I start feeling right, the heaviness and the shame. Whenever we can, I know sometimes in that moment it's very hard because we might be feeling like the person might be feeling already very down, but whenever we can reflect back on that, what was I feeling? And it's really that I think that practice with making a space for what is really driving, right? That idea that this is not really, we know that this is not about the food, right? We know this is a way of coping with overwhelming emotions. And I think the other piece I feel in our society that is very prevalent is this feeling that we have to fix it, right? We have to get rid of the emotion. It's intolerable. And I think that makes it harder because we have that sometimes that mindset. So then we need to do something, right? In our case, it's the food to kind of get rid of that. But right, we know that we're getting rid of it only in the very, very short term. We know later on, either in a few hours or tomorrow, we not only have right the strong feeling that we were trying to get rid of, but then we have all these other feelings that kind of pile up, the guilt, the shame. So even questioning that piece, I might be feeling very anxious or very sad or lonely, and to normalize that, right? That's those feelings, that is a human experience as well. And perhaps, only perhaps, we might be able to kind of sit down with it feeling a little bit more. And when I say sit down, I mean kind of tolerate the discomfort of that feeling. So I think it's kind of bringing this mindfulness piece, right? Again, the presence with no judgment to kind of all this that is happening inside us related to our emotional eating.
Oh, great. I love all of that. I think it's so helpful. And I love how you break everything down and say to just take it slow. Let's really deepen that awareness. I just think that's so powerful. Like you said, it's kind of a step that people kind of want to skip. They want to go to action. Let's change this. Let's fix this. But to really slow down and kind of focus on that awareness. And not only that, but that self-compassion piece that is so vital to this process. So I love how you explained that. Claudia, this has been so amazing. Do you have any words of wisdom or words of advice for people that struggle with emotional eating?
I think the few things I would like to add is really, again, the piece of, you know, spreading a message of hope. Because in my experience, I've heard many women said, you know, I've tried this so many times. You know, I've been struggling this since I was a teenager and maybe they're in their 30s. Well, all the women in my family, you know, had this issue, kind of the feeling that I'm stuck and this is kind of a life sentence, so to speak. So to all those women, I really would like to share that message that it is possible. It is possible regardless, right? Regardless of how long, regardless of how severe, regardless of, you know, your family history or your genetics, like all that might play a role, but I still feel there's so much that can be done to try to tackle this. So I guess kind of sharing that message of hope, of empowerment, that there are ways, even if what we try the first time, the second time, you know, the fifth time, you know, doesn't work. You know, we keep at it because since this has such a big impact, such kind of negative impact in our lives, I think it compels us, right, to want to find a way to tackle it. So I think the message of hope would be the first one. And the other piece that comes up as you say that, you know, this feeling that even though this behavior, and I want to validate, right, it can be so painful, so challenging, right, so distressing. And that's also very true. I think at the same time, since it's so, again, significant and can suck up really so much of our energy, I think sometimes it makes it kind of compelling to want to do something, right? To not give up. So I think in some way can be a pathway to do this inner work that perhaps we wouldn't do otherwise, that really then kind of deepens our awareness, deepen, right? Increase our insight. And I feel that's something that will serve us well, right, in our whole life. So I always encourage people to, even though certainly this is an obstacle, that perhaps, right, this can be, right, in some way, kind of, as they say, a blessing in disguise.
Oh, great. Claudia, thank you so much for being here today. I so appreciate it. I think this was such a great conversation, so powerful. I would love it if you could share where everyone can find you.
Yeah, well, first, thank you, Desiree, for, you know, making this space. I think it's such an important message, and thank you for giving me the space to share my thoughts. In terms of kind of staying in touch, I think the best way would be taking my quiz, and that would be my name. So it's claudiaperolini.com/quiz. And the quiz is really about what we were speaking earlier. It's really about deepening our insight. It's a very short quiz. It doesn't take more than 5 minutes, but it's really deepening our insight about what are our main triggers to eat. And that kind of puts us on the path of learning more about ourselves as the first step to kind of tackle this behavior.
Oh, perfect. I will definitely have to check that out. Everyone, I am going to have Claudia's links in the show notes, so definitely go check her out. Claudia, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. It was really my pleasure.
I really hope that you liked this episode and gained a lot of value from it. If you did like this episode, please share it on social media. You can tag me at The Wellness Project with Des on Instagram and at According to Des on Facebook. If you do enjoy my podcast and gain value from it, I would greatly appreciate your support. You can show your love and support by buying me a coffee. This will help my podcast to grow and in turn will help me to keep bringing on amazing guests. You can go to buymeacoffee.com/thewellnessprojectwithdes to show your support. All books written by or recommended by my amazing podcast guests are listed on my Amazon storefront. Go to the link in the show notes to check out those books. I would love to extend an invite to you to become a part of my community. You can do this through Facebook, where we will be discussing this episode. I would love for you to share your insights, any aha moments, any thoughts or ideas you would like to contribute. You can contribute in the discussion taking place in my Facebook group, and it's a great place to connect with me because I am in there every day with mental health and wellness content, discussions, reflections, journal prompts. It's a fun and supportive place to be. You can find the group at facebook.com/groups/accordingtodes, and that link will also be in the show notes. You can also check out more of what I'm doing on my website, accordingtodes.com. You'll find a lot of wellness blogs, written interviews, detailed podcast show notes, and my shop, where you will be able to find workshops, my self-care course, digital downloads, ebooks. There's a lot going on my website, so make sure you check that out at accordingtodes.com. And while you're there, join my email list to stay in the know about what I have going on and available for you. When you sign up, you will get your free ebook, The 5 Stress Reduction Techniques to Help You Feel More Relaxed. Thank you so much for being here. I will talk to you next week. So until then, I hope you have a calm and peaceful week.